The Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
Shapiro in studio. Jonathan Shapiro. You related to David Shapiro, Lee Charles, because Shapiro, I think, is Lithuanian for Smith.
Exactly. And I happen to be. Yes, he is the only... His family is the only Shapiro relatives that we have in South Africa. So, you know, that is something.
Because the stockbroker David Shapiro, with his three kids, ran the New York Marathon. David celebrating his 70th birthday.
Jeez, that is impressive.
And he managed to convince his kids to run the marathon. They crossed the line together. But you're here, you're not in New York, so...
I used to live there, but I loved it.
You weren't taken in by the family outing?
No, that's fantastic. Our family sometimes rides most of us ride in the Argus, what was it called now, the Cape Town cycle tour, except last year we got blown off our bikes, but now we love cycling, yeah.
Jonathan Shapiro, otherwise known as Shapiro, better known as Shapiro, has written. I've got, by the way, Alexander Parker and Tim Richmond have written a brand new book. Remember, Alex Parker wrote 50 People Who Stuffed Up South Africa. Then he wrote 50 People Who Made South Africa. Now he and Tim Richmond have got together 50 People Who Stuffed Up the World. And it is a really meaty edition. And the illustrations are done by Shapiro. Do they pay you like a royalty fee to use these pictures or do they steal?
Yeah. No, they would never do that. They would, and in fact, all of those things, the 50 people who stuffed up South Africa, the 50 brilliant South Africans. They've come to me and they asked me. I mean, I've done cartoons for so long that they give me the list and I say, yeah, I've got this one, you know, and then occasionally I'll do a little, sometimes I'll tweak some of them, but almost everything. I think I've done one or two new caricatures, but almost all of these things are taken out of the cartoons I've drawn.
Have you got a book coming out?
Yeah, absolutely. It's my 22nd annual, you believe it? Yeah. And it's called Hasta la Gupta Baby.
Hasta la Gupta Baby. Yeah. And you've got to get in quick with this one, yes.
It's Pravin bursting in, Pravin Gordhan as the Zoominator bursting into the Saxonwold Shebeen. And Zuma is just a kind of a waiter behind the door getting kind of smashed. And there are a couple of Guptas in the foreground doing something with money. And Brian Malefe starts crying as he arrives. And so,
what goes on in your brain? How scary is it? I mean, yeah, and I've seen you respond once to somebody saying, oh, you're so lucky because the stuff just works, it draws itself. But it's an incredible knack every single day to be saying, this is what's happening in the news, this is an interpretation of the news, and this is how I depict it.
Yeah, no, I mean, and I'm glad you asked the question in that way, because what tends to happen is that first reaction that you said, that people every single day, people who are really smart and really clued up about what's going on, and people who don't know a hell of a lot about what's going on, everybody says to me, oh, the stuff must be just falling out of the sky. You've got so many issues and so much, you must be, you know, it's a field day. Actually, I find it the idea of knowing which thing to do when things are so crazy that you... I once did a cartoon of myself on a psychiatrist's couch.
I remember it. I'm trying to remember what the caption is.
Well, essentially, as he said, since when have you been having these feelings of uselessness? And I said, well, since last week when reality became weirder than anything I could dream up. And then you've got these newspaper headlines on the ground of these crazy things that happened. And of course, that was crazy stuff from 17 and 18 years ago. Yeah. But now we have things that are even crazier. It's quite difficult to keep up and be a jump ahead when you're a satirist.
I mean, I remember studying history at school and then doing history, majoring in history at university. And so much of studying history is done through cartoons. So the cartoonists were very influential in the late 1800s throughout Europe. And you've got the cartoons of Bismarck and you've got the cartoons of all of these characters because there weren't photographs. So cartoonists were the illustrators of the day and they were making political commentary. And one goes back to your previous annuals and one gets a really good sense of the year in South African and global politics as well, because you don't ignore the globe, although your focus is primarily South African, but one gets a very good sense of the important stuff that happened in that year, and it's an historical
for sure. Every year. But I would argue that that right through the 20th century and now, the cartoons are still performing the same function that they performed back then, because the fact that there was the sort of illustrative idea of either illustrators or cartoonists doing sort of illustrations, that was important. But the idea of interpreting those events was already in place, you know, a good couple of hundred years ago. And that has continued. There's so many kids who come to me and say, wow, I remember this particular event and that event because of a cartoon that you did, yeah. And then we had to write about it in the exam, and it's amazing. I love the fact that the cartoons have that other life.
You're keeping a record. I mean, you're a public record.
So it's a public record, but also public kind of debater, interpreter, sparker of debates, kind of agent provocateur, whatever. You know, it's all of those things that cartoonists can be.
I mean, when what is your style of drawing? I mean, your style in the early days, your P.W. Werther stuff was angry. It was dark. Mm-hmm. It was really, it looked like you were scratching into the page, and it was really forceful. You've taken a much softer look. Yeah. Your style has evolved, but boy, it's no less cutting and no less sharp.
Yeah, there were a couple of things that happened. I mean, in the 80s, I was very influenced by Ralph Steadman in Britain, and also locally, right here, we had Derek Bauer, who was a Steadman adherent and brilliant. And there's an exhibition that people should go and see at Zico of the late Derek Bauer. Absolutely phenomenal. Those of us in Cape Town, he was graphically the best we've ever had. But Derek was wild and angry and anarchist, and he didn't have much of a political ideology. And I was the opposite. I was involved in as an activist, and ideology was my thing, and the real nitty gritty of the politics and all that, which wasn't his thing. So I gradually pushed away from his style. I wanted things that could kind of explain things a little bit better and get into the nuance of things. And when I went to live in New York and studied at the School of Visual Arts in New York, I saw some of the American cartoonists. Only a few of them were progressive or lefty. I mean, most of them are terribly middle of the road or right wing. But those who were, I saw another way of engaging with readers, which is a much more accessible way, a little comic influenced and all that.
There's humor to it, which makes the daily, the brutal daily reality of South Africa and the state capture.
Yeah.
If you can laugh at it on some days and be appalled by it on other days, but you're never going to be only angry.
That's right. If you're only angry, I mean, Peter Dirk Ace has this phrase, which he's got a saying, which I always get wrong, but he said satire has it's something like this. That satire has to be 49% anger and 51% humor. I think that's his version. But if that quotient goes slightly wrong, if it's all anger, and you keep bludgeoning people on the head every single day, then you lose the effect.
They stop coming. They stop
looking. So you've got to have something different. You've got to be, and you've got to have those twists and those surprises.
Do you know what we haven't done?
Yeah.
Spoken about money, but we will do that. So I was going to say David Shapiro. Oh, Jonathan Shapiro. Yeah. Zapiro is our Make Money Monday's guest. We will talk about money. I promise. I went down a rabbit hole with him. He's got a brand new book coming out called Hasta La Gupta, baby. And that'll be his 22nd annual of the year that has been, if you can face it. Your kids and your grandkids are going to pick up these books and go, was it really like this? And you're going to say, yes, it was. And Zapiro helped tell the story of South Africa through the late 20th century and into the 21st century. And we're going to talk about money and Zapiro, his earliest memories of money. What did he get paid for his first cartoon, I wonder? All of that coming up in just a minute.
The Money Show.
Make Money Mondays.
Zapiro is my guest this evening. We need to talk about money. How much did you get paid for your first cartoon? What was it?
The very first cartoon, I can't remember how many rands it was, but it was a few. But it was when I was a kid. I was like 10 years old, and my cousin came into my room and saw four Peanuts posters that I'd done. You couldn't buy the stuff the way you can now. You just didn't. So I loved Peanuts, and I made my own four posters of the four main characters in Peanuts. And I had them up on my wall, quite big, you know, A2 and all carefully done, colored one. And they said, oh, I want one of those. And I said, well, I don't know. And she said, I'll buy them. I'll buy them. How much would you? Anyway, so I think I got 20 Rand. For each person, and then their friends started.
Have rates improved since then?
No, but you know what's funny? Like then I was like 10 years old. I got like 20 rand or something like. No, maybe would it wasn't as much as 20 rand. Maybe it was like 10 rand.
Look, when you were ten bucks was a lot of money.
Yeah. But when I was already an adult and doing starting to do serious cartoons, I'd already done about 3 years of doing cartoons for organizations, United Democratic Front and various others, in conscription campaign, various grassroots, this, that, and the other. I then submitted two cartoons to the Weekly Mail, where Derek Bauer was the incumbent and doing great, powerful cartoons. But I knew I had something that I really wanted to test it out. So I sent these two cartoons of PW. One was the finger as a smoking gun, which is a strong image.
It is.
And one was PW, again, with his finger up and then the hand of God, like a big hand of God.
I remember that one.
No, these two, so the end of 85, I submitted them to Anton Harbor and Erwin Manoyim. They said, we love them, we'd like to publish them. I said, fantastic. They paid me 20 rand less P-A-Y-E. So I got 15 rand for each of them. And that was, you know, many years after getting sort of reasonably paid for my Peanuts rip-off cartoons.
So you got paid Peanuts.
I got paid Peanuts
by the Weekly Mail. Oh, my goodness me. I don't think things have changed very much. No, I really don't. But, that's the earliest memory of earning money. Yeah. I mean, did you get pocket money as a kid, or were you expected to do something?
Oh, we got pocket money, and it's really amazing to remember what it was. I mean, we got 1 cent for each year old that we were. 1 cent. So my earliest memory, when I was 4, 5, 6, you know, 4 cents a week when I was 4, 5 cents a week when I was 5, 6 cents a week, and then I remember also the weirdest thing. At a certain point in my life, I remember getting 1 rand a week. And somewhere, it had gone up by 100, somewhere between, 4, 5, 6 years old and when I was, 14, 15, 16.
It was called hyperinflation.
Jeez. So, I mean, that's amazing. 100 times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was a good return in those days. when you looked at studying, I mean, you were studying, I think, at UCT, and you were quite politically active in those days.
I wasn't that active. I was one of those people who was aware politically at a very young age. And my first political memory is, I reckon, 8 years old, when Verwoerd died. And I went to school, and he died, and everyone was expected to pray and be all upset. And all I knew from my parents was that this was a really bad guy who was, bad news for the country and was persecuting black people. I didn't know the details, but I knew that. And I knew, when things started to happen in 1972 to the students and to the, and I argued with my peers. And in 1976, when that happened, by that time I was in matric, and some of my peers did get, and people who felt as I did, got very involved at university. Mm-hmm. I got sort of involved, helped a little bit, did a little bit here, a little bit there, did a few pieces of artwork. I was studying architecture.
You did architecture. Did you ever practice as an architect?
No. I did my fourth year where you work in an architectural office. But the point was that it took my being conscripted, when I eventually couldn't stay out of the army any longer, that was when I became an activist. So I was already 23. And suddenly I felt like an activist. And then after that, I decided to use the cartoon to change. I mean, I was changing to become a cartoonist and use my cartoon.
Have you ever had a proper job?
Well, in my architectural fourth year, I worked for two different architectural firms. One was actually a lecturer of mine, and the other was a big architectural firm in town. And that's what you were supposed to do, work and travel. Mm. But while I was... I mean, two things happened. The first is that the very lecturer who I was working for, and it was my lecturer and was very influential, his name was Paul Ruggini, one day kind of distracted me from my work. And I said, you're examining me tomorrow, Paul. Don't distract me. And he said, oh, come on, let's go. Eventually he pulled me away. And then he said, see how easy you are to distract. At which point I swore loudly. We went and sat and overlooking Cape Town, overlooking the southern suburbs, just almost where the old road statue used to be. And he said, are you passionate about architecture? And I said, not really. I like architecture. Are you passionate about cartooning? I said, absolutely. He said, well, what the hell are you doing here? Go. So he was, it's not the reason I left, but it was part of it. So
He gave you permission to go.
When I was in Europe, I went to meet Udazo, who does the artist of Maastricht, and also the writer. He should have stuck with just the drawings. He's a brilliant artist, but he's not a great writer. But he's a legend, and he was incredibly kind to me. I rang his doorbell at 11 o'clock at night. I got lost, unannounced. I mean, can you believe it? I can't believe somebody doing that to me. And he was incredibly kind. He was dressed, thank God. didn't speak English, so his daughter interpreted. But I also went to try and meet Hergé in Brussels. Yes. But
Tintin,
who was my real hero. I missed him by a day. He had, but these were very powerful, powerful things, and I thought I must go back. They're not political in the sense that I wanted to become, but they are absolute legends, and and they were hugely influential for me. And I then found I was going to become a cartoonist and use my cartoons for political ends.
Do political cartooning reprobates invest money in stock markets?
I'm sure there are some. Not me.
How do you look after the future? Does the future scare you?
I reckon I was completely an adult. Look, first of all, let me be quite frank about this. Somebody asked me if I would do this and this media, and somebody said, oh, Bruce Whitfield's show. I said, absolutely, I'd love to speak with Bruce. I've often listened to this lot, and I've thought, I don't know how I would handle this because money is not my thing. And then I said, wait a minute, this is the slot I've said yes to. So now I'm uncomfortable talking about money.
But what makes it so interesting.
Yeah, as an old old socialist who's now got a career, and you know, money comes in, and I've got to do something with it, and I've got to provide for a family along with my wife, who's actually the business head of the two of us.
Well, thank goodness.
And she's kind of taking these decisions with her has been really important for me, because I've actually kind of figured things out with her.
She's helped you to adult, has she?
Well, yeah. I mean, I reckon I only became sort of adult money-wise when I was already 35 years old. I mean, I didn't know what was going on with anything until then. That's when I started getting a proper salary for cartoons, and then we decided that we had to figure out, you know, retirement annuities and this type of thing. But at age 35, I mean, some people start when they're 21 or 20.
Some people don't start by that. Some of the 35, they start much later. Yeah. I wish we could talk longer. I mean, we got distracted at the beginning talking about your new book, Hasta La Gupta Baby, with Pravin Gordhan on the cover. And the launch will happen soon, no doubt.
And Pravin Gordhan, as the Zoominator, he has actually agreed to come and launch the book, which is very exciting. On the 15th, it's Wednesday the 15th.
Where is it?
There happen to be some big heavy hitter things happening all over the place.
But your event, Pravin Gordhan
is going to be launching mine. Yes, at the yard that's right next to the new Zeiss. It overlooks the new Zeiss building. The Zeiss in the Silo district. And it's going to be, you know, evening launch, 5:30 for 6:00. And we've already got a lot of RSVPs. You don't have to have RSVPs. You just...
Yeah. Just pitch. There we go. Zapiero, thank you so much for coming. We didn't talk much about money, but it's lovely catching up with you. Jonathan Shapiro, better known as Zapiero.